The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, exploring the human endeavor.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Hi, Patrick Cox here. And as the world gets smaller, most of us become a little more aware of the barriers to making it smaller still. And one of the most imposing of those barriers is language. I suppose if we didn't travel to other countries or go live in other countries or do business with people in other countries or even just go on Facebook, if we didn't do any of that stuff, we wouldn't really come across other languages. But because so many of us do one or more of those things, those languages are right there, right before our eyes. Like in my Facebook news feed, it's a Tower of Babel, it really is. And it's not just the words, it's often the script. It's just totally foreign to me. I don't understand a word. And yet, before all of this globalization, I didn't really come across those languages, at least not on a daily basis. And yes, I know, I could hit the translate button, which I often do, and it works. I can make out what an article in a foreign language, using perhaps a totally different script from the one I'm familiar with, I can make out what it's saying. Machine translation, whether it's Skype or Google Translate, it's a fantastic thing, and it's making the world smaller. And we appear to be nearing a time, if we haven't already arrived at it, when we see human and machine translation as working in tandem. But what about this? What if right now you need total precision in translation? I mean, really need it, like your life may depend on it. Hitting a translate button isn't going to be enough. That's the case in many parts of Africa, where the world hasn't necessarily got a whole load smaller, particularly when it comes to medical care. Very few doctors, lots of patients, and a lot of donated medication. Well, Philip Martin, he's a reporter here at WGBH in Boston. He was recently in Kenya on a trip funded by the International Center for Journalists and the Ford Foundation. And he came into our studios to tell us about that trip and what he learned about translation there. Asking the questions is The Big Show's Marco Werman.
Philip, first, what is the problem that, as you saw it in Kenya, and where exactly does the language barrier lie?
Well, think about it, Marco. I mean, in the United States, we deal with two main languages, English and Spanish. But in Kenya, you have 60 languages spoken. And the problem of the language barrier, it's everywhere from healthcare advice, say, on how to use a condom to preventing the spread of HIV, to the need for interpreters when a doctor sees a patient. I talked to a doctor. Her name is Caroline Marethi. She works at a hospital in Nairobi that serves some of the city's poorest residents, and they often don't understand how to take the drugs they're given.
The instructions are written in English because they come in from the manufacturer, and many of these drugs, they're imported into the country. So we don't really have a say in terms of how the instructions should come in. But now what we've done at the local level is explaining to the patients in a language that they can understand, which is Swahili, on how to take the medication.
So, Philip, I mean, pharmaceutical companies in Europe are sending drugs in. The instructions are in German, in French, all sorts of languages. So what did you see, like, in the hospital? Are they actually pulling out the instructions and there's a translator there kind of making it plain in Swahili for the patient?
Well, I'll give you an example of just what this great need is. In Kibera, which is one of the largest slums in the world, you find a lot of people with great medical needs. I went with a woman who heads up St. Vincent de Paul Orphanage, and she went to the home of this man. This fella had diabetes. He had been taught how to take his medication, but it was all in English. One week, he actually missed his medication because it wasn't interpreted correctly. This woman wasn't interpreting for him, but she couldn't be there that day. He essentially, his condition worsened.
It seems like an odd use of resources to send medical personnel out to somebody's, you know, hovel to translate medical literature inside a pharmaceutical package. Aren't there any efforts being made at a higher level to translate all these pieces of medical literature before they get to the patients who need it?
I visited the local Nairobi offices of an organization called Translators Without Borders and spoke to a couple of people working there.
My name is Paul Warambo. Up to now, the translation industry has not been appreciated much. And so the hospitals know that language is a barrier, but they do not employ translators to do that because probably there is no budget to it or nobody just cares about it. When we realized this gap, then the Translators Without Borders noticed that really people could lose their lives and people could get into health complications for simple health issues that could be sorted out.
My name is Matthias Kathuke. We have an example of a mother who had a problem with milk production after she gave birth. So she goes to a hospital and she's given drugs that are supposed to stimulate milk production. But the prescription is in French, but she doesn't know how to read and write. So she goes home, she doesn't take the medicine. She gives it to the child, the newborn. The child dies. So that's how tragic miscommunication can be. And that's where translation comes in.
Now, that's a poignant example of why translation is needed.
Yeah, I'll say, Philip, a child dies because the mother gives them the medication intended for her, but dies because she can't read the prescription, which is in French. A really stark example of how translation could save lives. Philip Martin with our partner station here in Boston, WGBH, thank you very much.
Thank you, Marco.
And as well as having those offices in Kenya, Translators Without Borders runs programs in dozens of countries around the world. Laurie Thick is the founder and president of Translators Without Borders. Here she is chatting with Marco, first on why, in East Africa, Translators Without Borders started with Swahili.
It's a good language that can cover quite a few countries in East Africa. There are over 1,000 languages in Africa. So our goal is to hit those bigger languages, the lingua francas, the regional and the national languages that can really reach the most number of people.
And what about those dozens of other languages spoken in Kenya, just in Kenya alone? Do they get much translated into their languages?
They don't get as much, and that's one of the things that we are trying to change. During the Kenyan elections, we did work into 11 of the languages, translating urgent messages about the situation to try and curb the election violence that happened with the previous election. And I think that worked.
It's important that Kenyans have this lingua franca in Swahili, and it allows them to read in something other than English. But it also must mean that there are lots of people who still don't understand what the Swahili pamphlets are saying if they don't speak Swahili.
That's very true. In fact, in the Maasai lands, you'll see that happening where neither English nor Swahili are really appropriate for them. And they suffer from completely curable, preventable illnesses as a result of that.
And considering that, I guess a lot of these languages are mostly oral, what about literacy? I mean, is translation even going to solve that problem?
What we're seeing today is that every family has someone who can read. They have a school child who at least can read. And that's really important for getting the information across.
So I'm curious to know how you see this in other African countries. Like, take Nigeria. It's got 3 or 4 widely spoken languages, hundreds of smaller kind of tribal languages as well. And the speakers of those languages are often the poorest people with the least access to healthcare. Do you see this kind of trend in other parts of Africa?
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right on those numbers. If we took Hausa, Yoruba, and Igbo, for example, we can hit 65% of the population. But that does leave a lot of people out. The thing is, in the past, it wasn't scalable. It didn't make sense to try and translate into a lot of these smaller languages because of the cost. Mm. You wouldn't want to print pamphlets into all the languages that the people spoke. In order to be truly scalable, it needs to involve the communities themselves, like Wikipedia does for crowdsourcing. Africans are incredible linguists. They will generally speak 3 to 5 languages.
Regardless of education level too, right?
Absolutely, regardless of education level. But the issue is, if English is their 3rd or 4th language, you want to make sure that any critical information does get to people in their main language or as close to their main language as possible. But there is a potential crowd of multilingual, very smart linguists who could crowdsource translations.
And what about just the simple fact that there are nowhere near as many doctors and nurses across the African continent per capita as there are here in the U.S., meaning a lot of people, I suspect, self-diagnose. So you do need materials in some kind of native tongue, right?
Marco, that's exactly why it's important. Whereas here in North America, we might have one doctor for 500 people. There are countries like Ethiopia where they have one doctor for 80,000 people. Most people in Africa will never see a doctor in their lives. So, yes, empowering them with access to information, empowering mothers with information about how to take care of their babies is really, really important for saving lives.
I'm sure you've been thinking about this, but how do you think the Ebola outbreak in West Africa might have played out differently if there had been more translation of health advisories, say, you know, those warnings about bodily contact that seemed to come so late for so many people there?
There are two different ways that I think that more translation at the beginning of the epidemic would have rewritten history, would have changed the face of this epidemic. In the first place, when you're receiving a message in a foreign language, you may not necessarily believe it if you're not particularly well educated. So they lost an opportunity there when they gave the message about Ebola in English in countries where 15 to 20% of the people spoke English. It really gave rise to a lot of rumors that it was a government plot. That's the first thing. If you speak to someone in their own language, you're more likely to touch them and reach them and convince them. And the second thing, of course, is the information. The information just did not come across. I mean, we wouldn't be trying to inform people of an epidemic in the United States by speaking Russian. Why would we speak English in a West African country?
Medically, Laurie, are there any cases that you know of where a good translation over a bad translation or no translation at all could have made a real difference?
Yes, I do. I can tell you about a case of diarrhea. It's not a very nice subject, but it is a major killer of children in the developing world. One of our nonprofits, which is called the Mother and Child Trust, works with a group of women in India. And one day, the director of this nonprofit was working with the ladies in the village who he often came to meet. And he saw the ladies were quite quiet, and they were usually quite lively, and he didn't know what was wrong. So he asked, and they said, well, the daughter of one of the ladies had died in the night of diarrhea. So he went to the hut, and he saw the grieving mother, and he gave his condolences. He saw in the hut that there were the three things that could have saved her daughter. He saw sugar, he saw clean water, and he saw salt.
And there you have all the ingredients for a rehydration solution.
The family had all the ingredients they needed. They just didn't know. In the village, there had actually been a poster put up that was talking about how to rehydrate a child who has diarrhea. But it was in English, and the mother had not understood it.
Laurie Thicke is founder and president of Translators Without Borders, and I'm really glad we got her on the pod. She and I have corresponded and spoken on the phone for what seems like quite some time. It's just great to have her in person on the podcast. And that's it for this time. We have photos from Kenya at pri.org/language. You can get to the same place via Facebook or the World in Words page. And I'm on Twitter. My handle is Patry Cox, PatriCox. I hope you give a listen to the other podcasts in the Soundworks network. One with Farai, Radio Ambulante Unscripted, and Sideshow. They're all at soundworks.org. I'll be back soon. See ya.
The World in Words is made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The World in Words is also supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.